Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily lives. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Hello, I'm Ruth. It's really good to be with you here on A Quiet Life this morning. This is episode 64 of A Quiet Life, and as I record this, it is Wednesday, the 29th of April, 2020, and if you hear some thumps and bumps in the background, that is just my son walking across the roof of my little study, because we're a two-story house, and my den is downstairs, and the dining room and the kitchen is up above me, and I usually tell him to go into the study and not move while I'm recording, but today I haven't. I'm just letting him be. So if you hear thumps and bumps, that's what it is. Today's episode is two chapters of my year of saying no, and they are only do what you love and do you really enjoy this? They're two sides of a coin, and they're sort of different takes on the normal self-love, do what you need, do what you want, do what's best for you philosophy that we have. And I've liked them. I'm quite proud of them. And it's a story from my childhood as well. So I hope you really enjoy them today. As for what we've done in the last week, last Saturday was Anzac Day, and we went to the top of our driveway at 6 a.m. and we lit a candle. And we live in a little group of 10 units, and somebody else from our units came up. She had the last post on her phone. For a while, we thought we'd be there all by ourselves at 6 a.m. I don't do 6 a.m. very well. But anyway, someone came down from one of the houses across the road, and we stood there in silence, and actually it was quite moving, and I hope that this is a tradition that we keep doing in Australia. Now, if you listen to this from elsewhere in the world, Anzac Day is our Remembrance Day of the Australian New Zealand Army Corps and the sacrifices that have been made for us, especially at Gallipoli, but generally, I think. And I think this year we also, I guess because we feel we're a bit at war, I don't know, remembered especially people who are caring for us, frontline healthcare workers and all that kind of thing as well. It was just something different. Now, I've never been to a dawn service because, as I said, don't do dawn very well. I don't think I've ever been. I may have been as a child or something, I don't know. But don't normally do a whole lot to celebrate Anzac Day, but I found that really special to be a part of on the weekend. And coming up this week in a completely different, I looked at the calendar, like, I'm okay, I'm giving my little intro for my podcast today. What am I going to tell people about? Let's look at the calendar and see what's been and what's coming. And it shouldn't be hard to tell what's been, seeing as we're in isolation and we do nothing different every day. But actually, it's been a nice week this week because Moz has gone back to school, and so we have a bit more structure in our lives, and he's seeing people other than me at safe distance, of course. There's no students in his classroom, but he gets to have chats to other people, and that's really important for him. It's good for all of us, I think. So, that's something new that's happened this week. But then I looked at my calendar and I'm like, oh, what's on Friday? Oh, Friday is the anniversary of the first novel that I released. So I released Deadly Misconduct 2 years ago on Friday. So that's pretty exciting, and I think I'm going to have to do something to celebrate. So thank you for being part of my podcast and helping me to remember that I have an anniversary coming up that I needed to celebrate. And I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that that the third book in that Deadly Miss series is coming out soonish, and that I'm still able to be at home and write, and it's really, really good. And I'm also really thankful for the sunshine streaming into our house that is beautiful and warm. And I am thankful for conversations with family near and far. I've had some really helpful conversations with people helping me sort out my thoughts. And part of, I mean, I sort out my thoughts by writing in my journal and by ruminating and doing all the introvert things, but I also sort out my thoughts by talking to people sometimes. And there's been just two or three conversations in the last little while that have helped me to really figure out where I'm at and hopefully will help me to move forward. So I'm very thankful for those, even if one of those conversations was at 5 a.m. this morning, when I really did wish I was asleep. But sometimes you can't sleep because you're having thoughts that need to be sorted out in conversation. So I'm grateful for Moz talking to me at 5 a.m. So if I'm a bit more rambly than normal, maybe it's because I've not slept so well, and maybe it's because I had a coffee this morning and now I'm all caffeinated up and talking really fast. Anyway, all of these things happen, and we move on and we keep going. And I hope that you are able to keep going and that you are able to find things to be thankful for. What are you thankful for? Please let me know what you're thankful for in the comments, or on Facebook or on Twitter at A Quiet Life, or send me an email and tell me what you're thankful for, and let's brighten each other's days. So I hope that you enjoy these couple of chapters of my year of saying no, and I will chat to you at the end. June. In June, I had holidays. Well, half holidays. I was still supposed to work around 2 days a week, but I had much more freedom with my time. I used that time to write and think a lot more. I thought about what my skills and passions were, that reading and writing were things I really enjoyed and was good at, and that not everyone felt the same way. I realised that I needed to value these things, not ignore them just because they were easy for me. I thought about failure and success, and was encouraged by a talk from Ken Costa, where he stated that God would fulfil his objectives for actions we take in faith, even if it looks to us like we haven't been successful. I was excited about the idea of starting each day feeling joyful about the day ahead, but I also couldn't really imagine it, couldn't imagine that there would be a job anywhere that was even slightly inside my comfort zone, a job that I wouldn't have to push myself to the limit to perform. And was it right to want to be inside the comfort zone all the time? The thing I did the most in June was write. I finished the draft of my novel and sent it to my first readers for feedback. I wrote drafts of the blog posts I've put in this book. I even went to a writing craft seminar, and it was wonderful, refreshing, joyful. But was it going to work in the future? Was it what God wanted me to be doing? Or should I be pushing myself more? Chapter 8. Only do what you love. I've talked a lot about saying no, but life is not all about saying no. Sometimes we just need to say yes, and I'm going to share with you about something I said yes to, something horribly hard. Growing up, I was surrounded by family and friends. We often had people over for meals or went to visit others. We always lived in a faith community. After a short period in a normal house on a normal street, my second home was a farm where drug addicts could come for rehabilitation. My next was a foster home for children. My next, a missions community. We kids were taught, by the example of our parents, that relationships with other people were the most important thing in life. There was one person that I always hated to visit. Auntie Jill was not a relative. She was my mother's school friend. In those days, we called all the adults auntie and uncle, regardless of whether they were related or not. There are some friends I still have now who've asked me, could I please drop the honorific? It makes them feel old. Jill was not one of those. She loved the title Auntie. She needed it. Auntie Jill had a very hard upbringing. Her father was not around, and her mother was very ill for most of her childhood. Jill responded to this stress by becoming ill herself. I never remember her not being ill, or needy, or lonely. When we would go to visit, Jill would be lying in bed in her tiny unit. She would pull me close to her scratchy chin and ample bosom and hug me for what seemed like forever. She would ask me questions about how I was and whether I was happy, and she would make sure I gave the correct answer. She would give gifts, not gifts that suited us as such, but gifts she wanted to give. And then she would make sure we were properly grateful, that we said thank you, that we gave her a kiss and another interminably long hug. She would take on the discipline of us children, making sure we behaved properly. If you said something she didn't agree with, she would try to make you back down, and if you didn't, she would say, "Fair enough," a phrase I still rile at today. But my mother was faithful in visiting her old friend, so we, as kids, were faithful too. We moved away from Tasmania for a while, and with that, and the move back, and getting married and having children myself, I lost touch with Jill. I can't say I minded. I didn't even think about her. Then one day, when I was taking my young son to the doctor, there was Jill in the waiting room. She was thrilled to see me, thrilled to meet my kids, gave us all long, scratchy hugs, made sure that we would look her up. She had moved to a nursing home by this stage. Asked if I could help her with something. I'm a sucker for being asked for help, so I said yes, and we reconnected. Now I had to go and visit Jill myself, and she was thrilled that I did. Absolutely thrilled that I brought the kids with me. She would give us gifts again, hug us all again, manipulate us into staying longer than we ever planned to stay. I'd like to interrupt this story to state that I don't believe it's correct to make your children hug anyone they don't want to hug. I like the way that modern thinking stands on this issue. I wish I hadn't made my children hug Jill, and I think I forced them less and less as time went on. A child's personal space is an important thing for them to protect. End interruption. She would try to discipline my kids, to make them say what they didn't want to say, and that would make me angry. I was super angry that she was doing to my kids what she had done to me as a kid. I was super angry that I had to go and visit and that she wouldn't let me leave. I didn't want to be called her adopted niece or have the kids called her adopted great-niece and great-nephew. But I would still go and visit. Why? Because I believe that all human beings are valuable, not just the ones that are easy to love. I believe that God calls us to look after those who are in nursing homes, in prisons, in hospitals. Visiting Jill was horribly hard, but it fitted into my values, and I learned a lot from visiting her. I learned about setting boundaries. I didn't force my kids to come with me, and I would reward them after the visit if they did come. I let them see how angry I was, and let them make their own decisions about what behaviour was appropriate, and I think that helped them make their own decisions in similar situations. I learned from my daughter Jess how to say, "I'm not comfortable with doing that, Jill," when she would ask me to come and help her adjust her catheter or some such thing. I learned to say, and to help my children say, what they really felt in answer to her questions, not the answer she wanted them to give. I learned how to set a time limit for a visit and how to leave when the time was up. I learned how to decide how often to visit and stick to my decision no matter how much I was pressured to come more often. I learned how to find out someone's love language, Jill's was gifts, and to speak it, and to appreciate it being spoken, even if it was not my own. Mine is acts of service, a love language Jill simply couldn't speak. As my children grew up, they chose not to go and visit, and that was fine. And then as they grew up a bit more, they chose to go and visit, and I was super proud of them for doing so. Many self-help books and blogs encourage us to only do what we love. They would say that my visit to Jill was a waste of time and emotional energy, that I should have crossed her off my list of activities to do and should have found instead something that built me up, that encouraged me, that energized me. But as hard as my visits to Jill were, I was strengthened by the experience. When we look for a way to simplify our lives, the agenda for what goes on our list of things to do and what gets crossed off needs to be a greater one than, "Do I enjoy this activity?" Many things are worth doing, even when they are not enjoyable. Instead of asking if something is enjoyable, I think we need to ask whether it sits in our values, whether it's our responsibility. Jill was, partly, my responsibility. I needed to step up to the plate. I don't have a ministry to people in nursing homes. I am not one of those amazing angels of people who adopt the lost and lonely, the poorest in our community, and reach out to them. Meeting those people at Jill's birthday parties over the years was one of the rewards of reaching out to Jill. But Jill fell in my purview. She had very few friends, a very boring life, and she needed the connection to our family. I needed to put aside my selfishness for half an hour twice a year to reach out to her, even though it was exhausting. And yes, I whinged about her a fair bit. Like I said, I'm no angel. When looking at what to cut out of your life, what to say no to, you may have a situation like I had with Jill, something that is not fun, not rewarding, and does not help you invest in your ultimate dream. Most of the time, we say no to those things. But be careful that you are not missing the chance to sacrifice your life, to take up your cross, to build the kingdom of God. Sometimes it's better to do the things we don't love. Sometimes it's right. Chapter 9. Do you really enjoy this? Here's the flip side to the last chapter. Just because something is hard for you doesn't mean it's automatically the right thing to do. This may not be news to you, but I tell you, it has been big news for me. I went to my cousin's 30th birthday party last year. He had invited all of his church friends and all of his family. He had invited everyone. He goes to a different church to me, and I knew many people there on a Facebook friend basis, but there were not a lot of my close friends going. The party was held in a brewery, a big barn of a place. It was meant to run all afternoon. There was an open fire, nibbles to eat, drinks you could buy. He didn't plan many activities, just the cutting of the cake and a few speeches. The rest of the time was to be spent milling around and chatting. Now, as an introvert, that kind of afternoon is difficult. An afternoon of unplanned small talk with people I didn't know well. I didn't want to go. But this was my cousin, and it was his 30th, and I love him and his family. So I made plans to turn up late, and to leave early, and to try my best while I was there. This is the thing that shocked me. When my cousin got up to make his speech, he said that he had planned the afternoon to be what it was because it contained all of the things that he loved. Can you hear me? He planned an afternoon of pain and suffering because this is what he loved. For him, the party was pure joy from start to finish. For me, not so much, although I am exaggerating about the pain and suffering. Still, that was a bit of a breakthrough moment for me. Somewhere down in the depths of my being, I believed that there were types of events that no one loved, that everyone went to these events because they loved the person for whom the event was held and they wanted to show their affection to that person. Some parties I really enjoy, and some not so much. I think it's something to do with the ratio of people I know well to people I don't, or the amount of small talk required, or maybe even the activities we're doing. In the past, there were parties that I only attended out of a sense of love and duty. They were a socially acceptable method of showing my affection and regard to a special person. They were not events to be enjoyed. Once I realised that people actually go to these events because they enjoy them, I felt released to not attend them if I didn't want to, or at least to only turn up for a short time. I understand this is an introvert issue, but I have put myself through discomfort and exhaustion time after time out of a misplaced sense of duty. There have been many parties and occasions that I just should have missed, though I really love to be invited. Now, if I feel like I need to show my appreciation for someone, I might find a different way of doing it. I might send a card or a present. I might invite them for one-on-one coffee at another time. I am learning to take a different stance. I'm learning to think about whether I would enjoy an outing. If yes, then I go. If no, then I need to think about it a bit more. There may be other reasons that I would benefit from attending, or that I would benefit others by attending. But sometimes I feel free to leave it to the people who would enjoy going, the people who actively look for these opportunities. Learning that other people actually like parties helped me to understand that I didn't have to like parties. It helped me to learn to say no when I'm invited to a party that I don't want to go to. Other people will be there and will enjoy it. The same with big church activities. See the previous story about the high tea for Mother's Day. Or school fairs, or party plan parties, or big science festivals, or the morning tea roster. There are some things I am not going to force myself to attend anymore, and I'm not going to feel guilty about it. There are things that suit me to do that don't suit others, and vice versa. An example is the way that I volunteer at church. The other day I was having coffee with my friend Des, and I mentioned how I had been asked to provide dessert for a particular course our church is running. She looked at me and said, "Food isn't really your thing though, is it?" "No," I said, "but anyone can help with the serving and clearing up." She just shook her head at me. We chatted a bit more, and later at home I found my invitation email and replied to say that no, I wouldn't be helping out with this particular task, and suggested someone else to ask who might enjoy it. I have volunteered in a few different capacities. I have cleaned the toilets. I have worked the computer to put the words on the screen. I have handed out news sheets and taken up offerings. I understand that serving takes many forms and that being part of an organisation like a church involves serving the organisation. I know that we should be willing to serve the Lord in whatever capacity He calls us to, that cleaning the toilets is no less of a service than leading the services. For a while I thought that meant that I should clean toilets or serve morning tea. Not only that I should be willing to take the most uncomfortable job, but that I should actively seek out the most uncomfortable job. But now I think differently. The way I volunteer at the moment is by leading services. Around once a month, I stand in front of about 300 people and MC the morning worship. I give the notices, announce the kids' spot, pray, generally link the whole thing together. I enjoy it. It's tiring, but it's worthwhile, satisfying, joyful, and it's something I find I can do. Well, I think I can. I made the same comment to someone over coffee after a service once and she said, "Who told you that?" Anyway, I find that leading services is something I am well suited to. It is more within my abilities to lead once a month than to serve tea and coffee afterwards. There is nothing inherently holy or worthy or wonderful about forcing yourself to perform activities that you don't enjoy. I don't believe that we are meant to be miserable and exhausted all the time. If you are not enjoying an activity, it may be a sign that you should stop doing it. Let someone else take the reins. It might be just what they are looking for. Some people absolutely love being on the cleaning roster. It fills a part of their love for order and cleanliness and gives them joy. Others love serving morning tea, saying good morning to every single person who attended church that day. Still others get a kick out of running the technology for the service. It's good to be willing to serve in any capacity, but it is surely better to serve in a way that suits your personality and talents, to take that load that others don't want, and to give them the chance to do something that they would like to do. I'm not saying you should put off serving until you get the chance to do the one thing that you would be perfectly suited to, but I am saying that if we all work at the things we love, there's a good chance that all the jobs will be taken care of, and we would all be happier and healthier people. Looks like this week's ending theme is the same as last week's, finding a way to serve the Lord, finding a way to use your gifts and talents in a way that works for you and also blesses others. Are you finding new ways to serve through this lockdown, through this COVID-19 time? Next week is an interview again, and this time an interview with Steve Micklethwaite. I interviewed his wife Beth a couple of interviews ago, and now you're going to get to hear Steve's side of the story, so I look forward to being with you then. Special thanks to Catherine Joy from Joy Music House for the music for this podcast. Remember that if you want, you can support me at patreon.com/quietlife, and I will have a chat with you again next week.